From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of April 2019. It's tax day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And we'll be joined by Scott Irwin today. He penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website Friday looking at gasoline usage in the United States and how it's beginning to trend lower and the impact that will have on corn use over the next decade. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast and talk about the cash grain situation as well, right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And we're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about Chicago today. It looked like it was a fairly quiet day, though. Even though it was a quiet day, there was enough movement to feel like things were happening just a bit.
Yeah, there was some enthusiasm. Part of it was Tiger Woods coming back with his dramatic win at the Masters over the weekend. Last time he had a major win was the U.S. Open in 2008, and that time corn was $7.50. So I don't know if corn can make a dramatic comeback like that. But one question was, what were the yields when Tiger did win some Masters? In 2005, the yield was 12 bushels an acre lower. In 2002, 9 bushels lower. In 2001, 1 bushel higher than the previous year. And in 97, it was down about 1 bushel than the previous year. So there is a little correlation between Tiger's wins and yield from the previous year being a little bit lower. I know it's a stretch, but we need to cheer something on here.
I guess you're looking for something. Hey, speaking of stretches, it looks like we've got a wet stretch still with us. And that stretches all the way from the western Corn Belt right through Ohio and down into the Delta region. We're getting to that point where farmers really are thinking, hey, wait a second, this might have an impact on my ability to get in. Though I know the marketplace probably won't take it up for at least maybe another 3, maybe 4 weeks.
It could be going into the 1st of May at the earliest. This afternoon's planting progress reports expected to show about 5 to 6% complete as a nation. Then that benchmark keeps going a little higher over time. As we mentioned on Commodity Week there, probably this second week in May continues to be the critical time window. And if you're in a low area, man, my heart goes out to you. It's going to be a little bit more serious there. But I think the trade will keep that in the back of their mind and provide some support on some pullbacks in through here, because when you look at the supply-demand balance sheet, you know acres is a key, but if we don't get in a timely fashion and have a little heat on the crop during the growing season, that yield could be subject to concern as we go into the growing season. The other little bit of news is crush continues to remain strong. We crushed 170 million bushels of beans. So, you know, there's still some demand there. You know, commodity funds are short. So if we continue to feed this bull or positive news here for a while, and we get into May here and that weather's wet, hopefully the funds will want to cover some shorts.
Any new news from the China-U.S. negotiations?
Oh, just a lot of leaks, so-called leaks. Everybody's kind of an expert on it. You know, talking about shifting the tariffs around to some different commodities. Over the weekend, there was some positive vibes coming out that, you know, were close, and they want to continue to fine-tune things. They're continuing to meet on video conferencing. I don't believe they have scheduled a face-to-face meeting yet, but there's nothing negative coming out of it just yet. It's just getting that last 1%. Nailed down at some point in time here as we can come to agreement and kind of push us to the back burner.
I know the trade's been working through the Chinese hog herd, trying to figure out just how much of a problem it's been for African swine fever. Those numbers keep ticking up. What's the best estimate of how much pork they'll have or will import from across the planet?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, some more estimates came out as much as down 18 to 19%, maybe as much as 20% of their sow herd has been affected by this. And this thing is not just a one deal and, you know, we're up and running again next year. It takes quite a bit of time to get this under control. Then also it's going to take quite a bit of time to repopulate their herds. And so they're going to have to go shopping around the world for protein. And hopefully the U.S. isn't part of that mix. We're talking about over 280,000 tons of pork supposedly going to come from the U.S. If we could capture a good chunk of that demand. The weekly export sales report last week on pork, we did see upwards towards 77,000 tons of pork. So I think the pork imports are going to continue to grow over time. But if you watch that back in December on in hog futures, those are going to stay a premium for quite some time.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Very good.
That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We're now joined by agricultural economist Scott Irwin to talk about the future of ethanol in the gasoline supply across the United States. Of course, that's assured to some extent by the RFS at 10% at this point. And while the RFS expires, that 10% continues on past the 2022 timeframe. However, the number of gallons of gasoline has been trending lower lately, and you've taken a look at it, been thinking about what that might mean for corn farmers.
Exactly. I think that this is a very important conversation to have within Illinois and Corn Belt agriculture in the U.S. because what we know is that, at least to date, the amount of ethanol that is used in the United States is directly tied to the total amount of gasoline that we consume. We know there's major efforts to overcome that E10 blend wall, moving to E15 and so on. But for the time being, what we know, the fact is we're tied to 10%, which means that the amount of ethanol that we consume and the amount of corn that goes into ethanol will be directly based on what's the size of the U.S. gasoline market.
And how big is it at the moment, and how has it been trending recently?
It's about 143 billion gallons rounded, so it's obviously a big market. It's really interesting. We saw, you know, a decline from 2007 through 2013-14. Makes sense. The big recession, high crude oil prices combined to dampen miles driven and total gasoline somewhat. Then we saw the big decline in crude oil prices that started in the second half of 2014. And this caused a pretty nice recovery in miles driven and gasoline consumption in the U.S. But what is surprising, at least to me, is that the growth in gasoline consumption has just flattened completely in the last couple of years, despite a continuation of really strong economic fundamentals favoring gasoline consumption.
Any reasons that you can discern why that's the case?
There's a lot of guessing out there, and I can only guess myself. Several reasons for that. One is we have had up to this point increasing CAFE fuel efficiency standards so that new cars are supposed to, on average, be more fuel efficient. The only problem with that is you can show that U.S. consumers have gone back to buying what they really like to buy, which are trucks and SUVs. And so it's hard to see where that's a really significant explanation. Personally, I think it's probably better explained by an emergence of several trends kind of all at once. We don't really fully understand the implications of the ride-sharing apps. And maybe that's allowing us to have more efficient use of our vehicles than we had in the past. I think a big one is also potentially the role of social media and the changing habits of young drivers. You know, I have teenagers in the house, and it's amazing to me, you know, when you and I were kids, Todd, what was the first thing you wanted to do?
Drive.
Jump in the car and go drive around. I watch our teenagers. They don't do that. They go from point A to point B, and that's it. And so, you know, I think there's some changing driving habits going on, although is that really explaining what's going on here just in the last 2 years? I don't know. You know, so it's a puzzle. Is this just a statistical blip, and are we going to pick up again as we go forward? You know, that's a possibility, but I think I'm skeptical that that's going to happen.
Uber and Lyft, the ride-sharing apps, surely, as you mentioned, they have had an impact, I would think.
Well, maybe, maybe not, because if you think about it, it is the real mystery in this is the flattening of the vehicle's mile traveled. So maybe the ride sharing, it's the sharing part, which means that's what it is, because the cars are still being driven in the ride sharing. It's the ride sharing part that might be more efficient than what more people per car than we've had before.
I have one other thought, and this was not in the article that you've written, but I think it might work. Home delivery. Not having to go out to buy everything.
Right. And maybe the trucks are a little bit more efficient. I mean, that's an excellent suggestion, because that would say we should be looking at the total of gasoline and diesel, because the delivery trucks, I think tend to be non-gasoline powered.
They're probably diesel. So has diesel ticked up as...
instead of, and so that's a possibility. And that's actually a good idea. Maybe that's my next Farm Back Daily idea that you've given me, Todd. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Electric vehicles, or at least electric hybrids.
Yeah. I think electric hybrids, are certainly going to be a major issue going forward, the electric hybrids. Their penetration hasn't been increasing. It's going to continue, I believe. Electrical vehicles, you know, Tesla is, kind of the superstar of the electric vehicle area. But the numbers are just not there to have had a real material impact yet. The explanation is not entirely clear, but I do know that this is being factored into the U.S. government's official projections of gasoline use.
Yeah, so they project gasoline usage down. By how much, and what kind of an impact does that have on corn demand?
Well, if I used in my article the latest baseline estimates for gasoline use in the U.S., and that from the EIA shows by 2030, we drop from roughly 143 billion gallons. I think we drop about 26 billion gallons by their projections by 2030. So roughly in a decade, you know, they're saying we're going to lose over 2 billion gallons of gasoline use per year. Now, will that actually come about? Because the Trump administration's in the process of freezing the CAFE standards. And so there's a huge amount of uncertainty forecasting gasoline use out that far. For me, Todd, the important message is I don't see any scenarios that I find realistic where gasoline consumption in the U.S. increases. I mean, I don't even see anything that persuades me that it stays flat for the next decade. I think the real debate is how fast will it decline?
That's a rough debate for corn farmers to have, but they're going to have it.
That's right. And, you know, and of course, in that context, it makes a lot of sense why there is so much emphasis on E15, because corn farmers may need E15 and widespread adoption of E15 just to stay even in terms of the total gallons of ethanol that are consumed in gasoline.
That won't be an easy task. Hasn't been. The oil industry has not been on board with this for some time.
This is correct. They will be. The oil industry is going to fight them at every step of the way. We know that. But I do want to also provide some perspective. Is that, you know, this is not entirely a doomsday scenario. So, you know, if you take the EIA projections for 2030, roughly a decade away, you know, you're talking about a loss of someplace between 2.5 to 3 billion gallons of ethanol use. I mean, that's big. But you have to also recognize a couple things for corn farmers. That when I made those computations, I did not take into account that means a third less DDGs coming back for each bushel that's lost. So the net loss is only about 2/3 of that figure in terms of corn.
So okay. Somewhere around 600, 660 million bushels.
That's right, about 650 million bushels. The other thing is, you know, decades a long time, and the U.S. ethanol industry has made great strides in terms of exports. And, you know, gasoline markets globally are huge, even if they're going to shrink as well. So, you know, some of that could also be recovered through further growth in exports. But it's hard to see a scenario where you would get full recovery through the export markets from that big of a hit, if that's what's going to happen.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That, of course, is Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the cash grain segment now. We're joined by Greg Johnson. He's from the Andersons right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so what's the big news, if anything, in the cash grain side?
Not a whole lot. I guess the big news is we've got one more week off the calendar. We're 1 week closer to getting planted, I hope, and that everybody's got this wait-and-see attitude that we won't be in the field this week. If the weather forecast is right, we may not be in the forecast in the field next week. And so that leaves us with the week of the 29th, which if we can get in the field that week is still plenty early. But who knows what the weather will be like the week of the 29th.
You know, that wait and see attitude seems to have taken hold in lots of places, including the bushels that are both unpriced in your elevator and unpriced in the bin. How much do you think is left around?
I would say there's probably 50% of the corn left to sell, probably only a third of the beans. I think farmers have gotten a lot more beans sold. We had a better opportunity to sell beans early, and then with the $1.65 market facilitation payment, that I think farmers were a little bit more willing to sell beans on the small rallies that we've had. So I think there's not as many beans left to sell, but unfortunately, there's still a fair amount of corn left to sell.
That's going to be a problem eventually, I think.
Yes, I think everybody's hoping for a weather problem, and of course, everybody's hoping for a weather problem somewhere else other than in their own backyard.
So you need one problem to solve another at this point.
Yes, unfortunately.
Hey, what do your bids look like for the day?
Cash corn is $3.46, new corn $3.61, cash beans $8.67, new beans $8.71, and new crop wheat is $4.43.
And any reason to think the corn basis will close?
Over time, it'll get a probably about a penny a week better, 3 cents a month, just to cover the interest and storage costs. But other than that, probably not. There's still plenty of old crop corn on hand. The market knows that, and without a big export program to China, it just feels like we're kind of stuck.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. On this Monday afternoon, we're joined by Mark Russo. He's at Brisk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, glad to be here, Todd. Good afternoon.
Well, yesterday was an ugly day and cold, wet. I suppose that's part of the active pattern we've been in. It's warmer and dry, kind of nice out today. What do we see in the future?
Yeah, well, It's been quite a wild ride in recent days across Illinois, let alone much of the Midwest, where, you know, you go back, actually Saturday, it was just a beautiful day. Clear, highs in the 50s, north, 60s south, and we had our snow and cold yesterday. We're going to be back in the 70s across much of Illinois here tomorrow. So just some crazy variability, which it is spring, but even this has been pretty, even more extreme than usual, it seems. As we look out ahead for the remainder of this week and on into next week, one of the main actually changes here in the outlook compared to what it looked like last week was actually a warmer temperature regime. There still is going to be variability, but it's not going to be as extreme as what we've seen. And more days, or a majority of the days coming up from now through the end of the month, will feature warmer than normal readings versus cooler than normal readings. So that is one of the most important takeaways as we start off this new week. From a precip standpoint, like you mentioned, Todd, from there's still additional storm systems. It still is active, and we see rain systems coming through about every 3 days or so. So the next one is scheduled for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It's actually going to be a bit of a slower moving system, so the duration of it is longer. And then that's going to be followed by another system the early part of next week, then followed by another system after that. So right now it looks like the biggest of these storm systems, the most widespread, looks to be with the one here this week, within the next two for next week being producing a little bit lighter amounts, but still a bit more widespread activity. So it's going to be still pretty difficult here for any kind of rapid field work and planting progress here coming up. You know, we've seen some progress over the past week. Most of that was actually earlier last week, is the warmer start to the week. But going forward, with limited time between these systems, it's going to be a tough go.
So from the primary Corn Belt states, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, is it widespread rain every 3 or 4 days? Is it the northern part, the central part of those areas, or just...
Yeah, when you... Like, for example, when you look at the next rain system, there will be a bit more widespread activity actually up north in areas that they're having snow melt right now, in areas of the following the bomb cyclone last week. So that's where a bit more higher precip amounts will be versus, let's say, the eastern and southern Corn Belt. But then with next week's systems, those look to be a bit bigger producers or be more widespread, specifically in the southern and eastern Corn Belt states in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio on that. So each one is a little bit different. And when you put together all of those systems from now through the end of next week, it's actually, you know, painting rain, if you would, actually across much of the belt.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. I'm Todd Gleason.